Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.O. Covan. I am J.O. Covan, and with me, as always, reluctant though he may be, is my producer, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hi, J.O.
Now, guys, not to give you a peek behind the curtain, but I have to rush this episode because Mike has more important podcasters to get to. So if I don't give you my, I'm giving you my best this episode, but it might be a truncated best.
This is just a real test for you. So if we're pulling it up and we're showing the audience, we have 45 minutes to do a great episode of the show.
Yes.
And if you are the professional that I believe that you could be, we're on the clock.
Could be.
Let's fucking do it.
The professional I could be. So, okay. So, yes, it's amateur hour with J.L. Covan.
It's not. Jeez. It's not. I'm just putting, you're being tested today. Let's do it.
All right.
Let's rock.
And roll. Guys, first thing is, I need to instruct Mike. We're doing a couple of these episodes in advance because I'll be touring the country.
That's right.
And I will be gone till November. Can we get the rights to that song, please? I will literally be gone till November as far as these podcasters are concerned, these podcast listeners. But I wanted to say something, a callback to one of our early episodes, Mike. I don't apologize. I don't apologize for what I've done. But the SAG episode and the WIGA episode, because now the WIGA's and Matt Rife, we haven't mentioned him in a while.
Enemy of the show.
The WIGA's they made a great deal.
Yeah.
Now, I don't apologize for the things I said. I know some people didn't like the way I spoke, but it's hard to convey what I was saying, which is like, I agree with the strikers, but there's something wrong with this country simultaneously. And it's easier to like mock actors and stuff, but at the core was an agreement of like, get your money, make bargain. That's what your union's for.
Yeah.
It was more of an indictment of America and what we do to labor in this country and how we demean labor. But it was taken, I think, maybe I was a little strident to make my point and a little humorous to make my point, but it was not to be like, actors, go fuck yourselves.
Yeah.
It was more, and there is a jaded element of being a comedian and being like, we'll never even have that.
Yeah.
Because our workforce the median comedian is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's your median laborer in comedy. But we did say something also in that episode that that actors and writers were like, and maybe we will spur more labor activity. And we both poo-pooed that. And I did it first. I was, because there was a cynical like, yeah, no, we're not going to do this. But you know what?
They did.
There's been a lot of fucking big labor movement going on in this country. Some of it might have come about organically, but it is creating an atmosphere.
But I think this was also the thing that we said about it that was funny, that like, because I had a feeling that there was, I don't know that it's like necessarily the actors sparking it, but I do remember thinking like, it's just so funny that they're the first ones in. They're the first ones actually striking about AI and all these things, which are huge problems and things that we have to like handle right now. But there was a palpable humor to the fact that it was just like, oh, we're actors, rah, 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 pay us. You know, they do deserve to be paid fairly. Obviously, we were for the strike.
Like Rosie the Riveter, but taking a selfie of herself.
Right. Yes. Right. But it would have been like, it would have been more, I think that if like the auto workers had gone on strike first, then you're in a situation where like, all right, then all the rest of the unions follow. This makes sense that that's the first union to go. It's just so funny that it was like the writers of fantasy and actors that sparked this whole thing.
Yes. You know? And so I think it's been impressive to see, you know, I have a friend who I worked with who complains a lot. He saw like UPS drivers before the strike, got a great deal.
Yeah. Oh, we have our national alert. This was, well, you don't have an iPhone, so maybe you're not getting it. Bear with us for a second.
It's an Amber Alert. I'm not getting it. I guess it's because I kidnapped the woman.
No, it's a test of the national emergency system. I knew this was going to happen. I didn't realize it was going to, there's like, it doesn't matter if your phone's on silent or anything. Sorry. That was probably annoying, listeners.
Yeah. No, well, you know, it's just my show. I'm sure it won't happen at 3 o'clock.
It won't happen at 3 o'clock because it happened at 2:18. There's yours. We'll decide in the editing room if this comes out or not.
Look at me. Look at me, the Android. 30-second delay.
That's what happens. Too cheap to join the rest of us.
Not a sheeple. Not a member of the sheeple. So the UP, he was like, look at, we were talking about getting a new job and he was like, maybe I should just go to UPS. But he said it like dismissively, like they don't make that. And I go, maybe other people should be making more money, but you know what? UPS, they didn't even have to strike.
Yeah.
They came to the table and did their calculations and realized, yes, we can pay our people much more and give them a good deal because, you know, one of the benefits of an Amazon or is like, there's definitely so much more work in the delivery business. So like they're sharing those rewards and they can't, there wasn't even a strike. So if there's not even a strike, you've got to imagine, hey, pro-business Republican, I guess the business made a business decision and everybody's happy.
Right.
And, you know, I still think Starbucks baristas and like Amazon workers, those are the labor like Mount Everests because like we talked about it in that episode, Starbucks baristas, I'm like, you guys are working pretty hard. Like it's no joke. And I think those are the places that I'd love to see big movements. But you know what the thing is? Starbucks and Amazon would hit people in their daily lives. And I think then you'd see that more people, you'd see even more with the actors. It's kind of like a cynic is like, actors, who gives a shit.
Yeah.
But with their own lives, it'd be like, I stand with Starbucks. Wait, my coffee's $9? Gross. For what? For pouring, you get a lot more for pouring coffee and for Amazon. Like you put my bucks, we let you live. We let you live the way you want to, you lazy piece of shit.
Sure. Yeah.
Like just go to a fucking store. Like you can cut me out completely.
Right.
Get your fat ass in a car. It's not like you're going for a jog to the Walmart.
Yeah.
And you know, what should I smoke? Was that smoke?
Just stay in front of the mic for the love of God. Look at how you're making me look if you're watching on YouTube. Look at me.
You're very frazzled. Ugh. You better get some more pomade in that hair before the important show gets here. Anyway, I just wanted to say that on a real point.
Yeah.
It seems that they have been, if not the leaders, they have been part of a renewed labor wave in this country. And that's a great thing. And so I don't apologize. We don't do apologies on this podcast, but I do acknowledge that I was definitely wrong on that point. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing to be wrong about. And to quote Jerry Orbach in Dirty Dancing, I'm wrong and I say I'm wrong. And I go back and fuck my teen daughter, you swarthy dance instructor. The other thing, I had one other thing about the union shit. Good podcasting. Anyway, guys, thank you for being here. UPS, that's 100. They're making like, some of them making like 170K.
Dude, I've heard UPS is like a great job.
Yeah.
Benefits and like all sorts of stuff, vacation, all
Isn't
sorts
it a
of
crazy
shit.
Thing though? And I get it. I'm raised by an immigrant and a blue collar high school graduate. And education, you know, is everything. Elevated status, degrees, more earning power. It's hugely important. Like neither of my parents went to college. It was like extremely important. But there is a sort of ingrained, like, what if I became a UPS driver?
Yep.
And fucking was making more money than I was making at the law firm I just got laid off from.
Dude, I think about this all the time.
But I can't
the waste
lie.
That college was.
But I can't even lie. I can't even lie. Like there'd still be part of me that's like, shrugging
shamed?
My shoulder, not shame, but like you're, it's ingrained in like all my friends are white collar. Like most of my friends are no, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I'd be like, but I know that everybody would have like the stigma I had for it. It's like, but I'm making more money and that's what the job is for. It's not, you know, it's comedy is the only job I have any passion for. So it's like, well, if UPS wants to pay me 170K and this law firm wants to pay me 100K, I guess I'll go work for UPS.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just a good business decision.
I have a feeling your life would be more balanced too. Like I have a feeling that the way that the UPS shakes out, like those guys aren't, lawyer hours are crazy. Mm. Like 75, 80 hour weeks.
Well, not the way I was doing it. That's why I'm no longer a lawyer. They wanted that. And I said, pass.
You're right. I have a podcast to do.
Can I work remotely 7 days a week and not work? Final offer. it's just, but that's one of those things like the blue collar. We, you know, even though Jay Leno is kind of toolish sometimes, he had this thing where he was like giving away scholarships to people who wanted to like get like car mechanic training.
Yeah, right.
And he's like, it's a good profession. It's a, and we have, I get that why some people feel there's that resentment, in terms of like, oh, you're either aspirational and doing white collar work, or you're like a stupid laborer.
Yeah.
And it's like, it isn't that, obviously. It can be, but it.
Well, the other great thing that does come out of doing like we're talking about a car mechanic or something like that, a lot of times your business is a lot more community based, yeah, which is nice, you know, to be like the mechanic in town. Like, yeah, everybody just like, you know,
I'd be the UPS guy who fucks people.
Sure.
Right? Like, hey, yeah, JL's here. JL's here. Husband, could you go to the supermarket for 2 hours? Thank you. Don't worry. We'll only need 15 minutes. That's just for the cuddling after.
Yeah. I mean, that's a perspective. You could look at it that way.
But it is like, it's just, we've gotten so far afield that like there's that resentment for somebody. Like, I just found it funny when my friend seemed resentful, like using them as an example. It's like, well, maybe we're underpaid, or even scarier, maybe lawyers are overpaid. They're only paid. Well, they're only paid because they're protecting super rich people, like big firms. You're doing money for people. You're doing work for people with lots of money. You're doing a lot of work for people with lots of money.
Yeah.
So the market is dictating, but like, I would get into this argument with people all the time when they'd say like, you think a hamburger flipper should get 15 an hour? I go, yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't know why you're saying it like that. Like, that job sucks.
Yeah.
Like, there's two things that should determine how much money you get. How much is your work worth? How much does your job suck?
Right.
Whereas we always treat it like, well, if I'm doing legal briefs from a desk in my home, for a corporation, that's has a lot of value to them. Sure. Yeah. If you're flipping burgers, sweating over a fucking grill, that job sucks.
Oh yeah.
Like, and so you should be compensated for doing that work. May not like the other person, but like, and people treating like $15 an hour. Now there's people like Nina Turner, the sort of Bernie Sanders acolyte, who's already jumping to the minimum wage should be $25 an hour. And I'm just like, yes, I'm sure studies show that. We're still at 725. The federal wage is still 725. Like, you still haven't gotten anybody to fucking budge on that.
Yeah.
Like, which is a terrifying thought, to think that if you go to like Alabama and go into a Walmart, there's a person, if they're lucky enough to get 40 hours a week, is broke.
Yeah.
Like, they're fucking broke, even if they're working full time. It's crazy. Like, there's a woman in my neighborhood. I've seen her at three different stores. I've seen her at my mall in Wayne. Is that where Willowbrook Mall is? Do you have any idea? Anyway. Well,
it's around there.
I think it's in Wayne, New Jersey. But Willowbrook Mall, I've seen her at like an ice cream shop. I've seen her at my Starbucks. And we have she always asks me what I'm reading. Very pleasant, you know, community-based sort of. Yeah. But I've seen her in so many places, and it dawned on me. I was like, oh, she ain't getting fired. She's working all these jobs to get the money that she wants or needs.
Yeah.
That ain't easy. And it's like the idea of like, you think she should be, I don't know, she's putting a whole lot of fucking effort into this. So of course she should be paid like something reasonable. And 725 or even 15 in like a city like New York is like not really reasonable.
The issue sometimes.
But actors suck. That's my only point. Actors and writers, you're a bunch of crybaby bitches.
No, I think part of the issue sometimes comes down to the fact that like, whether this is fair or not, I think a lot of times jobs are looked at as like how replaceable the skill is.
Yeah.
And that's why it's kind of like, in theory, anybody can flip a hamburger or make a coffee. I'm not saying they shouldn't be paid a fair wage to fucking survive, because living off minimum wage in this country is
impossible.
Yeah, it's impossible. So minimum wage is just basically like, it's there so corporations don't pay people $0.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it's pretty close. $7
Starbucks
an hour.
Internships.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. You work 11 hours a day making cappuccino and we pay you nothing.
Right.
Right.
And I remember I said to somebody, this was a while ago, this sort of argument online with a friend, but I was just like, what value do you place on someone getting up every day and showing up to work for an 8-hour shift? What value do you place? Forget what work they do. That's the question. It's not what are you owed reasonably regardless of the job, what is the minimum you are owed for getting your ass out of bed?
Yeah.
And I remember Carolla used to have this kind of hypocritical gripe where it was like, you'd complain about the welfare recipients as if many welfare recipients don't have shitty jobs that don't pay enough, but you'd complain about them as being lazy. Okay. Well, I'm not lazy. I don't have your skills or Elon Musk's skills, but guess what I do have? The ability and desire to work 40 hours a week, get out of bed every day, put on a fucking Walmart shirt or a McDonald's tie and fucking go do a job. That for the business to work, someone like me has to show up and do that job. When you say things like McDonald's is supposed to be a transitory job, like it's just something to keep. No, who made that rule up? What society do you live in right now where the growing sector of jobs are service jobs? So like that's where the jobs are. You can't have a nation of 200 million Elon Musks,
right?
And Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
You need people to do the work. And it's like you can't have it both ways where it's like, you have to get up and do work. Okay. Well, I'm not a particularly smart person. I'm not athletic. I don't have a sense of humor, but I can be taught a job and I'll do it and I'll show up on time. Yeah. But you know, that job isn't supposed to be one of those like jobs that you have. Yeah. It's like, well, I need to pay my rent. So I'm going to take one of those jobs that pays.
Yeah. Right. Money. It's not a job.
But you know what? They raise that attitude of like, that's for summer kids. And maybe in your fucking quaint town, that was the job. Like, hey, Timmy, you got a news. Guess who delivers my fucking newspaper every day? A grown ass man throwing them at my door at 6:30 in the morning.
Right.
And I guarantee it's not his only job. He fucking probably gets up at 4 a.m. to do that job that ends at 9 and then do another job. It's not Timmy. It's not Timmy on his fucking bike going, hey, Mr. Coven, still a miserable fuck? I'll get you someday, kid. You know, it's a grown man doing the job.
Yeah.
And he gets paid a certain amount of money for that job. So it's just, that's my labor rant. But but it's good. It's a good thing to see what I've been wrong, that there it seems to be a growing labor movement in this country. Now, what I do love is that Joe Biden, you know, shows up and is just like, oh, we talked about this, didn't we? Or did I talk about this with somebody else?
You haven't said anything yet.
So Joe, I did this on my other podcast, you know, my other super successful podcast that I have to leave for soon. Okay. Joe Biden is like, hey, man, come on. I'm a labor guy. I'm not kidding. I like labor. I like working men built this country, Jack. I'm going to protest with you. I'm going to pass laws. If not for Joe Manchin, hey, man, I'm not kidding. If not for Joe Manchin, we would have made tax incentives for people to use labor unions. This is true. Joe Manchin like cut out a provision in like Build Back Better or the infrastructure that would have like given tax incentives for like union work.
Yeah.
Donald Trump fucking hates unions. Donald Trump doesn't even pay the fucking people who work for him, union or not.
Oh yeah. That's right. Famously. Yeah. He got a casino built for free,
but he's fucking out doing rallies with, by the way, guys they shipped in who aren't even union workers.
Yeah.
Going, Sleepy Joe's going to take your jobs. He's going to take your jobs. That's what he said. China. Going to China. They're going to China. How about that? How about that? They're going to take your jobs. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to protect your jobs. And Joe Biden's like, I'll fucking let you fuck Jill and give you $1 million if you're in a union. I'm going to fucking murder somebody if they try to fuck with unions in this country. I'll fucking kill anybody who hates unions. And Trump is like, I once went to it while everybody was striking. I actually fucked some of your wives, some of the union guys. I went to your houses and fucked your wives. I don't even think it was all consensual. I think some of them were rape. And that's what I did while you were striking for your rights. That's how much I hate unions. I hate unions. But are you going to back me? Are you racist enough to back me? Where are my Reagan Democrats who hate the blacks and the immigrants? Are you going to back me? Fuck unions. Am I right? Fuck them. And then in this country, it's like the union's divided over who to support. It's like, what? You know what I mean? You know, on one hand, there's a president who loves unions and is doing everything he can to support them and bolster them. On the other hand, a fat, racist white guy. Tough call, unions. And on that note, we'll be back. And we're back to Rain on Your Parade. How was that break for you, Mike?
Oh, so much better now that the mic is where it's supposed to be.
Well, you know, and I'm going to just lean back like Fat Joe. And
all of a sudden, fifth, really, sixth, seventh time you said it today, maybe?
Well, only once on mic, though. Thanks for breaking that fourth wall.
We were lifting it up and showing people this in this episode, weren't we?
Yeah, this is a real upskirt photo of podcasting. Speaking of which, when do those hot chicks get here? Anyway, guys, another thing I wanted to talk about today, it's not necessarily, it's sort of a defense, I guess, of liberal cities, big cities, mm-hmm. but New York in particular, because a lot of people keep shitting on New York, and I get it. It's grimy. The pandemic, I feel like people have, just like we talked about last week with boosters, I feel like people are like, well, the pandemic's over, so why isn't New York City a shining city full of people? By the way, I don't want to work in my office anymore. Fuck you, boss. Like this, there's this like I have friends who worked that I worked with who are very like, New York City's a dump. It's fucking done. It's horribly managed. It's like they were complaining about the rain flooding everything. Uh-huh. And it was like, people were like, Eric Adams doesn't know what he's doing. Maybe true. But what I found interesting is like the flooding that occurred like a week ago as of this recording was unprecedented. It was like,
talk to the carpet on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, still wet from Friday.
It got 4 months of rain in a day.
Yeah.
That was literally like the stat. And I'm like, I don't know who's going to prepare you for it. Like this idea that like all the reports said it was going to be horrible rain. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh my God, did you see the flooding? Eric Adams, you suck. And it's like, I don't know what he could have done to stop that.
Oh, it's also, he's getting blamed for the fact that infrastructure has been in place for however many, probably hundreds of years. And now we're facing big global warming ramifications, right, that they're going to keep getting worse. Flooding is going to get worse every year. They should probably start working on some of this stuff now,
yes,
but you can't blame him today for what happened in 2 days worth of rain.
Right. And we're not, nobody is still, the problem with us is we have long-term problems that are now becoming short-term. They're becoming immediate problems.
Right. Yes.
That we refuse to sort of change or modify. Like nobody wants to change the New York Times has a series of articles. This is about the country in general, about like water out west. Mm-hmm. We might be alive to see some real fucking Mad Max level shit.
Yeah.
It's scary because it's like, but people are like, you know, in Texas, fracking is using like more water in some of those cities than like the people.
Right.
And nobody is like thinking to change this or make any sacrifices. It's just becoming more and more people will just blame people in power. And every year goes by, it'll be like, but we had a chance to, we kept passing the buck. Like we never stopped passing the buck. And eventually the buck is going to fucking drown us and yeah, melt us.
Well, Midwest, did Flint ever recover? Do we have a Flint update? Anybody? I remember seeing a thing online about how undrinkable the water in Flint was. And then
I think it's still undrinkable.
Yeah. That was like a decade ago.
Yeah.
It just never got fixed.
Yeah. I just see this. I feel like the criticism of big cities, you know, whether it's, you know, my same friend loves talking about, I don't even know if he's ever been to San Francisco, but loves it as a symbol of like,
yeah,
the decay and what the Democrats have wrought.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that the pandemic, this whole thing that was, you know, conveniently totally overblown, meant nothing, total joke to a certain segment of the population. That is still the thing that changed everything. And there's all these different factors that big cities, everybody still wants to be in a big city. By the way, when my building that I used to live in Midtown, where you live across the street.
Yes.
That building in 2020, late 2020, was like 40% vacant.
Yeah.
Nice Midtown Manhattan building, 40% vacant. A year later, capacity rents at or above pre-pandemic levels. Like it had never had, like, yeah, and it was full. So yep, there is that argument about the city needs to become more affordable. But where's the incentive? To be honest, are landlords going to make it more affordable? Because they have a limited supply, and a building like mine, which is a good building, it wasn't a piece of shit building. It's a nice building. But there's always going to be like full demand for that because there will be young people who want to come to the city. There will be people with money. There's this limited supply that can always find its demand.
There's not, JL. And this is actually something that I talked about on my podcast a few months ago. Mike Coscarelli Rules, currently in hiatus, coming back soon. Anyway, there is plenty of supply because do you know where there is no demand? It's in the corporate world. There are so many office buildings right now.
I was in the residential space first.
Well, but I'm saying so residential space in New York City is obviously that is limited.
Right.
But
there's a whole vast supply of potential residential real estate that could be converted, that these offices could be converted.
And what is the big complaint with everybody in terms of living in New York City? It's space, mm-hmm. right? Isn't that usually what everybody says? Like, oh, you pay this much money and you get like a studio apartment or whatever. Well, what has more space than a fucking floor of a corporate office building? All of these new buildings that are going up that they can't get any businesses to buy office space because everybody's working remote. How awesome would it be to pay? I pay $3,700 to live in a one bedroom across from where you used to live on 51st
Street. I pay less than that to live next near a train in Jersey for a two bedroom building with a bunch of amenities.
Right. And I don't have any of that shit. I live in a fourth floor walk up and it's expensive. I like my apartment. I'm not complaining about where I live. I'm just saying, how awesome would it be to spend $3,700 and be able to get a giant luxury like floor of an office building? It's possible. It's not impossible for that to happen.
Yeah, no, that's impossible because nobody's going to be like what will happen is we all get used to people. It's like it's like somebody's salary. The greatest blessing I got when I moved to Jersey was we looked for a place that we could split and I could afford on what I thought was my 2019 money, which was part-time legal work, comedy gigs. Okay, good. We're in a place. Then I get my job at the law firm right after that. Doubled my salary. But I've already signed the lease. So I'm like, oh, good.
Right.
I'm already living not just within my means. Then 2020 hits and I make a shit ton of money in the next 2 years on comedy. And I'm like, if this had all happened before, I would have gotten a two bedroom in Long Island City with a view of the city and be like, what's $7,000 a month rent? And right now I'd be sitting here going, I'm having a thimble of water and a crumb because that's all I can afford to eat because all my money's going to rent. I think New York City, like people, will eventually adapt to be the most expensive it can be. Now, it won't be able to be as expensive, but I think there's too many contradictions with people. And when it comes to different cities, the haters of the San Franciscos, Philadelphias, New Yorks, they hate liberal prosecutors. They don't live in the cities, but they're very concerned about crime in cities they don't live in when they can exploit it.
Yes.
They're very concerned with crime when it comes to look at that. Well, you don't live here. Like, let's talk to the residents of Seattle. And, and don't get me wrong. There are going to be people who complain about certain things. It's not perfect. But it's this overblown Fox News hype delivered to the electoral college states that matter.
Right.
Ohio, you live in a fucking dump in Ohio. And New York is bad. New York is bad. You know, you get New York. And then I remember I did this whole thing on my previous podcast about Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And somebody in the governor's race had actually pointed out that the murder rate in New York City was lower than the murder rate in the state of Oklahoma. But and the governor in the debate was like, okay. And enough people just have the preconceived notion of like, we Oklahoma, we safe, we Bible, we got our guns to protect ourselves. You ain't gonna do no crime at my house as long as I got my gun. And we pray for people. We got Christians and we gonna be all right. New York, them a den of sinners. They doing violence and rapes all over the place. And then it's like, no, but the data is actually per capita, you're more dangerous.
Yeah.
But that ain't don't make no sense. Then I mean, I did shoot them fellas, came to my house. They look suspicious and all with their brown skin, but now we don't do crimes now here. And so people have this. So it's like all these big cities, they it's the same people where it's like, oh, COVID was bullshit. So we don't have to credit that as a game-changing, epic-changing event to our cities.
Right.
So San Francisco, did you hear a lot about crime in San Francisco before the pandemic?
I had some people that lived in San Francisco that I knew.
That the homelessness was definitely becoming a huge issue. Homelessness was a big issue.
Yeah, and it was
in LA too. My friend lived near like Skid Row. He had a really nice loft apartment, but it was like jarring to see. But I think...
to be honest with you, JL, I kind of think San Francisco is the one bad example for this because I do think that, like, I knew a couple of people that worked in tech out there that left primarily because they were just like, it's getting a little, it's not that, I don't think that they felt that it was like so dangerous. I do think there was some, like, there was a law that I mean, you might know this better than I do, but I thought that there was a law that they passed that basically kind of, that they weren't going to prosecute petty crime. Is it, did you hear that?
I've heard those different things about several cities, but yes,
I only heard it about San Francisco. Okay. For where people were saying, like, all of a sudden, like, there were Dwayne Reed's or the equivalent out there.
Oh, I would see that, like, of dudes just walking in. Like, you'd see those videos of, like, with a bag of shit and just, like, out.
And just, like, yeah, fuck it, because they're just not, they're not going to prosecute it, whatever.
But, I think it's a convenient, there are problems in San Francisco, like in a lot of big cities, but I think it was very convenient.
The timing of it.
Just to sort of hammer it, like, this is a failure of liberal policies. It's like, well, income inequality is certainly not a liberal policy. It can be a result of, but, like, you had this, you know, in certain cities, it was, you know, New York is dealing with sort of a, everybody wants the city to survive. Nobody wants to come to work.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, the city was built for over 100 years to be a business residential district.
Commuter city.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like this idea of, like, so you're going to change the, one of the biggest cities in the world, one of the biggest economies in the world. In like 2 years, it's going to, like, oh, look, it's a piece of shit. Well, I mean, how do you, we don't do anything in this country that's big. We can't do the climate. We can't do this, what we need to do on climate change. How do you expect one city to just be like, all right, we're going to make a big left turn towards mixed usage housing and corporate buildings. And we're just going to make it happen.
Yeah.
And San Francisco is in another way, is I think probably what happened was a combination pandemic accelerated things. But I think tech was like an economic inequality on steroids.
Yes.
So rental like money, like, was just exploding. It was like an oil town times 10.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh yeah, no, your apartment that was 2,800, it's now 5,900. Like you, we have too much money. The market is too rich that, like, lots of people, you know, then Oakland, like, everybody got to move to Oakland, and Oakland starts to become like more of a upper middle class.
Brooklyn, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but it's, and I don't, it's not to say that there aren't problems, but people love to point the problems out. And yes, more right than left love to just point at big cities that they could never afford. I think there's a lot of Schadenfreude, and Spox is happy to deliver it. Like, look at all these cities that you secretly wanted to live in, but were too fucking useless and broke to do so.
Here's a shot of Delancey Street. It's very dangerous.
Look, these places suck now. So you should be happy in your fucking strip mall, you fat fuck. And it's, I love chain restaurants. I'm a man of the people, but I do see this kind of, this weaponized jealousy, because it's always people who don't, like, my most critical friend of New York City does not live in New York City.
Right.
Like, but it's like this, it's like porn. It's like class political porn to be like, just to even fantasize about, wouldn't it be great if New York failed?
Dude,
would it be great?
The other thing
for this country.
Yeah. The other thing, you're right about everything you're saying. The other one bad thing that doesn't work in New York's favor when it comes to trying to, not that it matters to convince these people that New York's not like a total fucking cesspool, but I've always said this, the places that you actually enter into New York City from, if you are not, if you're like Bridge and Tunnel, or like 8th Avenue, right around Port Authority, Penn Station,
it's Welcome to the Jungle. It's the opening of the Welcome to the Jungle video.
It is such a nightmare. Delancey Street, like I was saying, by the Williamsburg Bridge, those specific places really are as bad as they're advertised. Not that it's like so violent. It's just like, it's where the craziest people are.
Yes.
It's so disgusting. Like that, if you just see that strip of New York City, you're going to think,
you're,
like,
going to die. Welcome to the jungle.
But that's it. It's just like when you step foot outside
Meanwhile,
of Penn
you go
Station,
to Ohio and everybody's a fucking hillbilly crashing on opioids. And they're like, this is the real America.
Right. But it's like walk 3 blocks east. And it's just like, wow, this is how much more pleasant is this?
Right. We should everything enter into like Hudson Yards.
Yeah. Right.
Shiny new skyscrapers.
Right.
This is New York. But even
here I am on 59th Street, right by the park and all these great restaurants and Columbus Circle.
Moynihan Station. Have you been the Amtrak station in New York, the new Moynihan building.
I've like seen.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is for years. Cause I'm a big train guy.
Yeah.
You know, Hey, Mister, great song. That Penn Station, it's a pile of shit. And then they built Moynihan and it's like, oh my God, if you arrive by train now and enter Moynihan, you're like, what a gorgeous spectacle. This is New York.
You're greeted
with like the way you should be greeted by a great city.
Yeah.
Even if you step out two blocks later and there's a homeless guy shooting up.
Cause Grand Central's great.
Yes.
If you come in off of like the Metro North or anything, it's like Grand Central's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, but Penn Station is just such a shithole. And it is kind of like,
JL explaining why New York isn't dead. Penn Station, a shithole. But let me just summarize this very quickly and then we'll move to the last segment.
Yeah.
But like my issue in general, using New York as an example, because New York is not dead.
No.
New York is not dying. It has too much that people want. Would I prefer that there may be a little more emphasis on some culture and not just, you know,
banks
and musicals based off of Marvel movies and whatever. I'd like, you know, things like that. But we talked a little bit like in the manners episode about like just kind of etiquette and things like that. But we have an issue with our criminal justice system. We have an issue with economic inequality and we have an issue with real estate and these three, and we have an issue with climate change. And these are four major issues that are going to hit cities hard if we don't correct them.
Yeah.
But we are also a society that seems to be unwilling. We love to complain and bitch and denigrate. But like all these things have solutions, but they will take sort of community and political will
and work
and work.
Actual work.
And we are not willing, like when you can tell me that evidence of Eric Adams' mismanagement is not handling an unprecedented flood.
Yeah.
Like you are somebody who is missing the big picture. And we have to have people who are going to be just like democracy on an even bigger level. You can't just fix it. They have to be active processes. Correcting the criminal justice system, unfortunately, might involve some petty crime. Now, if irresponsible news organizations want to continue to show that, like it's happening everywhere, every day, all the time, people are going to be repulsed by that. And some of those people are going to want to be repulsed by it because you get me a nice picture of a heavy black woman stealing from a Rite Aid.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, that's really hitting me in my sweet spot. And that's not to denigrate that there aren't issues in all these things that are real, but it's like, if the cities go, have your fucking laughs. And the cities aren't going to go. But all you dipshits that think it's fucking hysterical, look at New York City, nothing, you're fucking toast. Like if the cities go, you're done because either we're coming to your shit town and raising the rate, the rental and taking over, or everything's going to collapse.
Right.
And you can fucking sink in your opioid cesspool laughing with your last choked breath.
Yeah, right.
Poetry. Anyway, guys, New York City not dying. Some of the people in New York City definitely are, but New York City will live. And I look forward to visiting it because I can no longer afford to live here. Anyway, guys, we'll be right back with our final segment after this quick break. And we're back, guys, for Mike's favorite segment and mine, Comedy Talk.
Yay.
Wow. Unbelievable. Guys, the punchdown of the week. This is a fun one. I did a video on YouTube, where I tend to do those things, about Donald Trump being very annoyed at being given a gag order by the judge in his New York civil case. And a running joke for me is I have Trump refer to Letitia James, the attorney general, as Attorney General LeBron James. And I said that multiple times in the video. And somebody was kind enough to say, dude, LeBron is a basketball player. I think you mean Letitia James. And Mr. Dino, 1953. Once again, that's my, you know, that's a 70-year-old. Those are my people. those are my audience. Mr. Dino, 1953 comes in and goes, he knows that. It's called comedy. Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Thank you. That's when it feels good, when you don't have to do your own dirty work.
Yeah.
When your fans will do it for you. So Mr. Dino, 1953, you don't get the punch down of the week, but you get the assist of the week, a new category, which I'll never do again, but you get the assist. And dude, LeBron is a basketball player. You're the punch down of the week. How could you?
Yeah.
What do you watch? If you don't think that I know that, like there's certain things where I go, but how can you be a fan of mine if you don't think I know that? Like then I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
If you don't get that, I get that. So punch down of the week. And then your comedy recommendation. It's a book, Mike. It's a book this week. It's not a comedy special. The book is called Misfit. It's by one of my favorite comedians of all time, Gary Gulman. Mm. It's a wonderful exploration of his kindergarten through 12th grade. Great memoir. Seems almost tailor-made to be made into like a Hulu or an ABC show, but it's really funny. Highly recommend it. And what I will say, and of course, like so many things in comedy, there's part of it is like I relate to, which makes me obviously like it more because then it makes me think of me. He reminds me so much of me in so many ways in this book. Like we're both very tall. We're readers. We're sort of in many ways gentle giants. But he's so funny. But the book, what I realized is what Gulman has mastered in addition to being just a terrific comedian is he's likable. He's a likable guy. And as you're reading it, you're like, oh, and like elementary school, he was like a wisecracker, sarcastic. And so was I. And it's like, he kind of grew out of that and learned like, hey, you know, like, don't be such a dick. He starts making friends. There's so many funny stories. I don't want to spoil anything. I just highly recommend it. Anybody who likes memoirs or comedians or just it's, if you like my stuff, you will love this book. But what I realized reading it is I go, oh, that's the difference between me and him. He grew out of his dick phase.
Where this was going.
I grew into it. Like I only got more rolls of rolling my eyes. Yeah. Like, Jesus, are you fucking kidding me? Like he was like that in fourth grade.
Yeah.
And he put it together. And me, I only got more like that. And I thought maybe that's the key. So if you want to read like an alternative history, like in a multiverse, a JL multiverse where a tall, well-read future college athlete who becomes a good comedian, great comedian. If you want to read the multiverse account of what it would be like maybe if JL succeeded, Misfit by Gary Gulman. I think that would be a good. So if you're tired of hearing me be negative and Debbie Downer, this is like the multiverse. This is like the happy JL timeline. Where he grows out of being a dick into a great comedian with success. So Misfit by Gary Gulman, that's your recommendation for the week. Thank you for listening. Come visit a big city. Bring a lot of money. Don't bring a firearm, but bring a lot of money and you'll have a nice time. New York City is not dead, but my career is. So thank you everybody for being here. You can, I don't know where you can find me. Probably Salt Lake City. This week I'm in Salt Lake City on the 28th. So come to that show, all my Utah fans and blah, blah, blah. My Patreon, my all this. Go to jlcomedy.com. You find everything I do. Support it in some way. And I will see you next Thursday.